Hey folks, Scott Weingart here, and this is the MCRIT Podcast. Today, for episode 167, I am posting a talk from SMAC Chicago. I would tell you to go to SMAC Dublin, but guess what? At this point, you can't go unless you already have a ticket because it is sold out. But today, a talk from SMAC Chicago, Sarah Gray, practitioner of emergency medicine and critical care in Canada, an amazing lecturer, talking about ED critical care. What could be more perfect to go up on the MCRIT site? Let's get right to it. Sarah Gray.
Okay, here we are. So we're going to be bringing upstairs care downstairs. But I want to start with a story. Who remembers the first time they saved a life? Do you remember? Do you remember the feeling? This echoes a little bit of what we were talking about. I'm going to tell you my story, although you'll laugh, I think, because I was horribly naive. So it was my very first day of clerkship in medical school, and I was in the emergency department, and a patient came in VTAC with a pulse, still talking to us, and the decision was made to cardiovert him, and I had no skills or training whatsoever, so I was the person designated to press the little orange button, because that's all I knew how to do. And so I did. I pressed it, and zap, he got his pulse back and smiled at us and said, thank you. And I thought, oh my God, we've just saved this man's life, in albeit a small way. And I've learned a few things since then, but I think the key is that feeling is why so many of us get up in the morning. That feeling is why resuscitation matters. And it's why delivering excellent resuscitation in the emergency department matters. But the issue is for so many of us that geography is destiny. The level of care that we can deliver in the emergency department is often not the same as what we deliver in the ICU. In my ICU, I've got pharmacists, I've got my own RTs, I've got social workers, I've got teams of people and time to focus on those patients. In my emergency department, and I work in a high-end academic trauma center. It's a big place, but there are lots of days where my emergency department seems more like a bus shelter in a third world country, albeit with an open bar. And I love it there. Don't get me wrong. Those are my people. I fit in. But oh, no, I do. But it leads me to wonder and to worry about the challenges in delivering excellent care downstairs under such a different set of circumstances. So we need to look hard at what those challenges or hurdles are, right? For me, they fall into two categories. One is in the knowledge and skills arena. Not all of the healthcare workers in my emergency department are super into resuscitation. They may not go to those conferences, they may not read those journals, this may not be what they practice and train up on. So when we're looking at bridging these gaps, some of the solutions need to focus on elevating our knowledge and skills across our groups, across our hospitals. The other significant issue, the challenge, is lack of resources in the emergency department. We have a significant lack of people resources, manpower. You don't have the same staff that you have upstairs with the same training. You don't have a lot of the gear and gadgets and monitors and things we like to play with upstairs. And you have a critical lack of time. My unit upstairs, it's closed. There are a set number of people. There are no patients in the hallway on stretchers. There are no patients on the floor. It's a very different environment. So when we understand those challenges, we need to figure out how we can either improve within those constraints or overcome them. Because the goal is to still save as many of those lives as we can. So my job today is to inspire you with a few ideas for how we can bridge these gaps. You may already be doing some of these ideas in your hospital or at your place, but maybe I can give you a couple you aren't doing and convince you to take them home and start trying them out. Because what we want across hospitals, countries, globally, is to be elevating the level of critical care that we have in our emergency department. So in honor of David Letterman, recently retired genius, I'm going to give you my top 10 list. We're going to start from 10, we're going to work down. 10 is the hardest, the one that probably needs a 5-year plan for most of us. 1 is the easiest, something you can start doing on your next shift tomorrow. Okay, here we go. Number 10. My first idea is that we should all be building EDICUs. This is the Scott Weingart model, right? Who works in a hospital where you have a dedicated EDICU? my hand should be down. I don't actually have one. I can only see the people in the front row, but none of them have their hands up. Okay, here's the model. You get dedicated space with dedicated physicians and nurses with training, and all they do all day long is high-quality ICU care in the emergency department before patients go upstairs. Right? This is a great model for delivering world-class care. It's tough because it takes resources, space, buy-in, training. But when you think about it, your residents would love to work there. Hey, you would probably love to work there, right? This may just be a dream worth building. You can't do it tomorrow. I can't do it tomorrow. But I can put it in my 5-year plan. I can start talking to my boss about it. I can start seeing who's interested in putting resources and training towards that. All right, but let's go a little easier. Say that one seemed like a bit too much effort. Solution number 9. Many, many of us already have MET teams in our hospitals, or critical care response teams, or whatever you call them. Teams of people interested in resuscitation or critical care. How about we harness those people to come assist us in the emergency department? That happens in some hospitals right now, but in many, MET teams don't go to the emerge or don't help manage with those patients. Having that team of skilled people with time and resources can really help us optimize the way we're managing some of these patients downstairs. If your hospital doesn't already have a team, maybe you want to think about starting one. If you already have one, maybe there are ways you can optimize them or leverage them more effectively. Maybe that was still too much. Number 8 is make a fellowship. Make a resuscitation fellowship. Make an EDICU fellowship. Easy to recruit residents. This is a hot topic. It's fun. This is where you're going to train the people who are then going to move on and staff the EDICU you're building, right? This is how you get your attending staff to raise the level of their game, because when they have to teach and role model cutting-edge critical care in the emergency department, that helps them elevate the level of care that they're delivering. This is how you create a hospital that is focused on resuscitation as a key issue and get yourself resources. Number 7, getting easier. Say all of that sounded like way too much work. How about you just hire an ED intensivist for your group and have them do it? Hire them to start your fellowship. Hire them to convince somebody to build your EDICU. Hiring one of these people helps you bring knowledge and skills into your group. They can teach, they can educate, they can research. It gives you a colleague to collaborate with. It gives you somebody who can consult on your critically ill patients. And it helps you build bridges up to the ICU to help you have a more collaborative relationship. They don't all look like these insanely happy people. So don't worry. Some of them look a little bit like this. That worries us too. It's okay. They're nice underneath it. Okay? Think about it. Number 6. Start tracking your quality data. Pick an outcome that interests you, whatever interests you. Pick post-arrest care. Pick tracking effective resuscitation in the trauma room. Pick sepsis resuscitation. Whatever it is, track your data and feed it back to your team on an ongoing basis. And watch the quality that you deliver increase. I don't know what your groups are like. My group of eMERGE docs are the most competitive people on the planet. Bar none. If you tell them they are not hitting a goal, they will work to hit it, particularly if you feed it back to them on an ongoing basis. This doesn't have to be a big project. It can be small. It can be local. It can be a spot audit. But tracking your data and feeding it back is a really valuable way to overall boost the quality of care that you're delivering. Number 5, team training, okay? If you want a one-day fix, a one-day solution, make a skills day, a training day, a resuscitation day, whatever interests you. Invite your team. Have your docs come, your residents, have your nurses. Make it multidisciplinary. You could do it as a sim day. You could do stations, Central Line Station, Pacer Station, Blakemore Station, whatever you like. This is a great way to up the knowledge and skills in your department. And when you're doing it collaboratively as a team, it also helps you work on the skills including communication, leadership, etc. Maybe you can do part of it physically in your eMERGE. In situ training helps increase the fidelity and maybe the take-home learning. But this is a great way to make sure you're keeping the level of skills up across your group. Have joint EDICU rounds, preferably regularly, preferably multidisciplinary. Invite everybody. This is a great way to improve knowledge. It's a good way to make sure everybody knows who everybody else is. You find out what the people upstairs are doing. The upstairs people find out what the downstairs people are doing. This is a really easy way on an ongoing basis to improve knowledge transfer. And it also leads me into a more subtle benefit, but I think that's really there, which is my number three. You can make a friend there. You can make a colleague or a collaborator there. And there is nothing better when you're in the middle of a bad case than having a friend on your speed dial who can give you advice. Say you don't know where that patient should be admitted. You can just call your buddy. You can text. You can bump into them in Starbucks the next week and say, hey, I had this case. What would you have done? What should I do the next time? Having a friendly face on the end of the phone or in person coming down to your eMERGE can be a huge thing. If you make a friend in the ICU, bring them downstairs and blow their minds as to what happens down in the eMERGE, right? If you work upstairs, bring an eMERGE friend upstairs. Show them the ivory tower. Try to recruit them to the dark side, right? There's all sorts of great stuff that happens on a very subtle level when you start leveraging better teamwork and collaboration across the disciplines in your hospital. Okay, getting easier and easier here. Number two, create a protocol, a checklist, an algorithm, a poster. Now, algorithms and protocols in general have been trashed fairly extensively at this conference. I enjoy that. It's good. But I still think there's a place for them at the bedside for clinicians who may not be experts in that particular field. They can help people raise their game a little bit if they lack expertise. And I would also argue that checklists and reminders help all of us who are experts at 5 in the morning when we're not thinking as clearly as perhaps we would at 8 in the morning. If you want, after your joint EDICU rounds, have each speaker just give you their top 3 pearls, stick it up at the physician's desk until you have your next rounds. Make a pre-printed order set. Make a poster. Build some decision support into your CPOE. Whatever it is, these bedside tools can help raise everybody up to what the baseline level ought to be. Last but not least, we're down to my last one. And this one takes a bit of a setup. So here you are. You're in the last hour of your eMERGE shift. It's been busy. You're tired. And a patient comes in, hypoxic, short of breath, kind of blue. You make the decision to intubate. You take your first look. You can't see anything. You stop, you pull out, you readjust, you go to whatever your next trick is. You take your second look, still can't see. Now you're sweating a little bit, and you're breathing a little faster. That's okay, you regroup. Maybe you did the airway workshop. You have another trick up your sleeve. On your third try, tube goes in. You exhale. And what do you do now? Most of the time you walk away, you have a celebratory coffee, and you call the ICU, right? It's now somebody else's problem. So the last thing I want to ask you, my last solution here, is I want to ask you to spend 10 more minutes at that bedside. Whatever time you're currently spending, I'm asking you for 10 more minutes. 10 minutes of actual, concentrated, focused thought. These are the patients where that time matters. You are going to see a whole lot of ankle sprains in your shift where 10 minutes one way or another does not matter. That person who's had elbow pain for the past 6 years, like, they are okay. The critically ill patients are the ones where your time counts, particularly in those first few hours that they have in the emergency department. That may be their most critical window for resuscitation. You can make an enormous difference there, you personally. Say you have a post-arrest. After you get the pulse back, spend that 10 minutes on excellent post-arrest care. Right? After you intubate, spend 10 minutes optimizing them hemodynamically, optimizing the ventilator, making sure they have everything else they need before they're going upstairs to the ICU. if you have a septic patient, spend that 10 minutes an hour later when you go back to reassess their volume status to make sure that whatever fluid you've given is appropriate and effective. Those 10 minutes can actually save somebody's life, can change the trajectory that they're on, because these are the lives that hang in the balance when they're in the emergency department. So I'm going to sum up for you. Here are my 10 tips. Build yourself an EDICU, or be inspired to start talking to people about it, thinking about it. Leverage your MET teams or your critical care teams. Start a fellowship. Hire an ED intensivist. They're nice people. Track your quality data. Start a skills day or a team training day. Have joint rounds. Just make a friend and bounce your cases off with them. Collaborate with them. Do a paper with them. Have some protocols and checklists. And maybe most importantly, spending an extra few minutes where it really counts. Because the sky's the limit, people. You want to dream big and then build your dream. And with that, I'll thank you for your attention and turn it over to Jesse. Ooh, you have your own.
Thank you, Sarah. That was wonderful.
Thanks, Ian.
Jesse, do you have any questions?
Well, the concept of an EDICU certainly stirred up a lot of discussion.
Right on.
I suppose trying to bring it into something that's question orientated rather than raging debate, flicking back and forth between people that are in the room. How do you convince someone to resource that? And I suppose bring into that as well the exponentially growing number of extra nurses and peripheral staff. So where it might be a small group of doctors, the additional growth of say 10 nurses for each two resus areas.
Yeah, so I'm sort of rolling in this negotiation at my hospital, and I have a few different arguments. One of them is, if you want to be the best, you probably need to build this. And if you look at it from a quality perspective, there are a lot of great quality arguments to be made about how this can optimize care and improve the care you're delivering. But there are probably also, although I don't have data for this is just my opinion, resource arguments. If you can give people upfront intensive resuscitation, that then means they are well enough to go to the floor rather than the ICU, you've saved your hospital dollars in the long term. Right? That upfront investment may well be worth it over the long term. And that's the argument I go with.
That sort of synthesized the majority of the things that you could frame as questions, I think. So.
Great, thanks.